Okay, Chag Sameach, everybody. Wanted to share some thoughts on not just our parsha this week, but the three parshiot that surround this week. We're starting with Vayeshev, then Miketz, and then Vayigash. It's really like one combined narrative. So I thought, since I'm not going to talk that much about Chanukah, we could start off by talking a little bit about Chanukah. One of the famous psukim that's discussed when you're talking about candles is found in my favorite book. Anybody have a guess what my favorite book is? Josephus. It's the one sefer in Tanakh. It's only one parak long, and it's also read the entire. Ah, very good. Ovadia. So in Ovadia, pasuk yud chet, famous pasuk. Or it should be a famous pasuk if it's not. Vaya beit Yaakov eshu beit Yosef lahava, describing the houses of Yaakov and Yosef. One of the only times that Yaakov and Yosef are juxtaposed with each other. That Yaakov's house is the fire, and that Yosef's house is the flame. So a lot of people, and you can read more about this after the class, compare that to the lights of Chanukah. That Yaakov was somebody who was centered in Eretz Yisrael. He had all these children, but Yosef was somebody who had to go out. So when you're talking about Chanukah and Pirsumei Nisa, you have the fire itself that's standing, and then what's expressed to the world is the Yosef. You have to be able to go to Mitzrayim, you have to be able to succeed in a world that's not just surrounded by Jews, and that's the concept of being both Yaakov on the one hand and also being Yosef. So it's used many times by Chanukah. I want to take this pasuk totally out of context and compare it and use it as an introduction to the shir that we'll have a chance to share now. As you read these three parshiot, the narrative of, right, you start with Vayeshev, Yosef, his brothers, that narrative, will go through it, and then Miketz, and then Vayigash. Ultimately, you build up to this moment in which Yosef is confronting his brothers, and he finally reveals himself. One of, possibly, the only time in the Torah where you can take three parshiot, one after another, as a combined narrative, and you have like real live cliffhangers at the end of each of the first two. Very, very powerful. It's like, it's so good, they can, and I mean, they did. They made a Broadway play out of it. I could tell you for sure, the real version in the Chumash is much better. So I want to share some of that with you. I think the entire story hinges on one central question. And it comes from this pasuk that we just read in Ovadia, that there's a house of Yaakov and a house of Yosef. One question, and I think it's like the most obvious question. The Ramban asks it, and it's the first source here. Before we read the source inside, just think about it for a second, okay? Yosef is in Mitzrayim. He's a relatively powerful guy in Mitzrayim, as we see with the story with his brothers. He was there for a number of years, both in jail, but then ultimately he's in Potiphar's house, he had some manner of power. When he goes to jail, he was kind of stuck, but then once he becomes the viceroy of Egypt, he's there for a certain amount of time, for 9 years before his brothers show up. Why did Yosef never send a letter home to Yaakov? Right? It's like the most obvious question. If you have this father that you miss so much, and you're willing to put your brothers through this whole entire charade where you put one in jail, you send them home, you get the other one, you stick them all in jail, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, he cares so much. Why would he never bother to send a letter to his dad? Right? It wasn't like his dad was the one who sold him to Egypt. His dad, he had a great relationship with him. Why not just send a telegram, something, whatever they did back then. Yosef probably could have found a way to get in touch with Yaakov. So the Ramban asks that question, and I think it's the fundamental question that's going to lead us to an understanding of these three parshiot together, lead us to an understanding of the narrative, and give us a lot of insight into who Yosef was and who the sons of Yaakov were. Not just the sons of Yaakov collectively, but into really the individuals themselves, specifically Yehuda, Reuven, Yosef, and Yaakov, really get a very deep understanding. So what I want to do is, I want to just first pose the question, and then give three different alternative answers. The first is that of the Ramban, and then two answers that are alluded to in the Rishonim, but we'll go through the development of some of the more modern biblical scholars, specifically Nechama Leibowitz, Rav Yaakov Maidan, and as well Rav Yoel Ben Nun, all of whom, by the way, aside from, of course, Nechama Leibowitz, have actually spoken here and been in Rinat. So if you've heard this before, apologies, but I think I can shed some manner of new light onto it. So first, before we get into the actual sources, let's just make sure we're all on the same page in terms of the story. So let's try to go through the entire story, the entire narrative, 2-minute recap. So start at the beginning of Parsha Vayeshev. What happens? Yosef's there with his father. He's obviously the chosen son. Yaakov loves him. He gives him the coat of many colors. He has all these crazy dreams. Why would Yosef ever tell his brothers the dreams? Like, all he had to do was keep his mouth shut, right? Like, if I had a dream about I have little brothers, but like, thinking about like my brothers-in-law, if I ever had a dream like that, like, you wouldn't tell anyone, right? But Yosef tells his brothers. He has the dream. He ultimately goes from his home out to the field to graze. Brothers decide at first they're going to kill him, then ultimately think better of it. Instead of killing him, they just decide they're going to throw him into a pit. Tzadikim. So they throw him into the pit, and then they go off somewhere, they have a meal. While they're eating, they say, you know, maybe instead of just leaving him to die in the pit, we're going to sell him. But by the time they get back to sell him, he's already been sold, and he's on his way down to Egypt. So Yosef is traveling down to Egypt. When he gets there, he comes to Potiphar's house. Right, he becomes the head of Potiphar's house. Ultimately, he is once again abandoned, or once again he is double crossed by Potiphar's wife. He ends up in jail. He spends how many years in jail? Quite a few years, right? More than one or two. Yosef spends a couple years in jail. Ultimately, after 9 years in jail, he finally gets out, and then he goes. So the total time he's in Mitzrayim is 22 years, the 13 years that he's between Potiphar's house and in the jail. And then ultimately he lands after he knows the dreams of the two Sarim of Paro, the baker and the wine guy. He finally ends up in Paro's camp, right? In front of Paro. He tells Paro the dreams, and he becomes the viceroy of Egypt. While all of this is going on, Yaakov and the sons are continuing to grow. Yaakov's living in Hebron the whole time. Not a word from Yosef. We have a story about Yehuda and Tamar in the middle of this. But ultimately, it's one continuous narrative. And we don't hear anything more about the brothers. Presumably, they're doing well in Hebron. But Yosef has this whole story in Egypt. He ends up as the viceroy of Egypt. His brothers, during the second year of the famine, decide, after two full years of the famine, they decide they're going to go down to Egypt to get food, and that's where our parsha begins. That's the middle of our parsha. Ultimately, Yosef comes face to face with his brothers. He realizes they're there. They don't realize that it's Yosef. So what happens first? Now, this is the key part to make sure we're all on the same page. What's Yosef's first move? The brothers see Yosef. What's the first thing he does? Right, he talks very harshly with them, and he throws Shimon in jail. First he throws all of them in jail for 3 days. Then he comes back and throws Shimon in jail and says, until you guys come back with the youngest son, with your younger brother, I'm not taking Shimon out of jail. Right, so now, we started off with 12. Yosef's in Mitzrayim, Binyamin's home, Shimon's in jail. The other 9 brothers, they go back to Yaakov. They speak to Yaakov. Takes a little bit of time. Finally, Reuven tries, Yehuda tries. Ultimately, Yaakov agrees to send down Binyamin. What happens when Binyamin comes back? The story with the goblet, everybody remembers. Ultimately, they find the goblet after they leave the second time in Binyamin's sack. They bring Binyamin back and they throw Binyamin in jail. Then what happens next? Yehuda comes running back to Yosef, approaches him, Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda comes to Yaakov, to Yosef. They have the whole confrontation. Ultimately, Yosef is overcome with emotion, and he reveals himself to his brothers, and then ultimately the brothers then go back, they get Yaakov, and ultimately everybody ends up in Mitzrayim, formation of the Jewish people. So clear, we're all on the same page? So now, all of that story, at no point does Yosef ever decide, I'm going to reach out to Yaakov, and I'm going to see how he's doing, I'm going to let him know I'm alive, maybe he still loves me, maybe he doesn't, who knows, but at the very least, you would expect that at some point Yosef would have reached out to Yaakov. So that's the Ramban's question. We'll read in the Hebrew, but there's English for all the sources. Ki yeshut mu'achar she'amad Yosef b'mitzrayim yamim rabim v'ya pakid v'nagi b'veit sar gadol b'mitzrayim. So he's like the number two guy in Mitzrayim. Eich lo shalach k'tav echad la'aviv lo'hodiu l'nachamo. How could he never have then thought, maybe I'm going to send a letter to my father, asks the Ramban? Ki Mitzrayim karov l'chevron k'shish yamim. You know how close he is? He's 6 days away. So he's there for 22 years, and it's a 6-day trip. And he's never thinking, maybe I'll send someone to Chevron. V'ilu haya mahalech shana. So the Ramban says, even if it was a year long, even if it was a 1 year long journey, he still should have taken the time to go and send a message to his father. And he had all this money, he had all this opportunity. He could have sent at any point in time, he could have sent the message to Yaakov. And if you look, the Abarbanel, we're not going to read it inside in the interest of time, but the Abarbanel furthers the question and says, okay, and then once the brothers get there, why does he put them through this whole charade? He sees his brothers, obviously he's angry. But for the sake of his father, he could have just said, by the way, you know, I'm Yosef, I'm not happy with you, but at least go back and tell your father that I'm alive and to maybe come see me in Mitzrayim. So that's the Abarbanel and the Ramban's question. So we're going to go through 3 answers to this question. The first one is that of the Ramban himself, and he has a very beautiful approach. He says, what happens, okay? Think about the psukim again. What's the first thing that Yosef says? And if you're looking in, if anybody has a chumash with them, you can read more psukim. I didn't put them all here. But the very first thing that Yosef says when he sees his brothers, the very first thing. So he says, "Vayiskor Yosef et ha'chalamot asher chalam lahem, v'yomar alehem raglim atem lirot et ervat ha'aretz batem." Very strange pasuk. first thing he thinks about when he sees his brothers after 22 years. He's not thinking, those are the guys that sold me to Mitzrayim. Those are the guys that stuck me at the bottom of a well. Those are the guys who I had this rough relationship with. First thing he says is, oh, by the way, the dreams. So what the Ramban says is Yosef sees these dreams, and these dreams are, in fact, nevuah. And so Yosef feels that if these dreams are nevuah, he has to be the one to fulfill these dreams. And if you remember, what were the dreams? The dreams were that all of the brothers come to Yosef and they bow down before him, right? And in the second dream, it had the Shemesh v'Yareach. It had the sun and the moon. So that's his parents also should be coming to him to bow down before him. So what the Ramban says and what the Ramban develops is that in fact Yosef thought that it was his tafkid, it was his job, to fulfill the dreams that he had had back when he was a 17-year-old boy living in Hebron under his father's house. So the Ramban develops it, and he says, and by the way, this is not an abnormal thing. Chama Leibowitz develops it even more. She says, there are other times in Tanakh in which we see people have nevuah, and when you have a nevuah, you don't just wait for it to happen. Explains the story of Gidon, gives another example of the Shivat Zion with Ezra and Nehemiah. They didn't wait the 70 years. In fact, they went back to Eretz Yisrael beforehand. But the Ramban develops this whole approach very simply that Yosef had a nevuah, and when Yosef had a nevuah, he thought it was his responsibility to fulfill the nevuah. So in order to fulfill the nevuah, he does whatever he can. And that's why what happens, so he sees the brothers, and look at what the Ramban says. He says, Vayishal lahem l'shal. Skip to source number 5 for a second, and then we'll go back to source number 4. Lefi da'atisha davar behefach ki yomer hakatuv ki berot Yosef et achiv mishtachavim lo zachar kol achalamot asher chalam. So right, what happens when the brothers come in? They see Yosef. He's like the king of Mitzrayim. So what do you do when you see the king of Mitzrayim? You bow down. And of course the brothers don't recognize Yosef because he's no longer wearing his ketonet pasim. What's he wearing? He's wearing all of the clothing that Paro gave him to make him look like the number two guy in Egypt. He's got the headdress on. He's got the golden necklace that we described in last week's parsha. Yosef is this incredibly well-dressed Gadol in Mitzrayim. The brothers have no idea who he is. And Yosef's understanding every single word that the brothers are speaking because they're speaking Hebrew. So they think that he's Egyptian. But Yosef is in fact one of the brothers and he's listening to every word they're saying. However, what happens? He sees all the brothers bowing down to him. And think about why they're bowing down to him, right? They're bowing down to him because what do they need to get from him? They need to get food. And what was his first dream about? Wheat, about food. So Yosef now is saying, oh, this is starting to be the fulfillment of my dream. What happens? The brothers are coming to me, and it's like all of these sheaves of wheat, and I'm the one in the center, and they're all bowing down to me. And he says, oh, you know what? Now I need to fulfill the second dream too. Now I need to make sure that Binyamin's here in order to fulfill the entirety of the first dream because it's 11 sheaves of wheat that are bowing down to him in the first dream like the Ramban explains. And then he says, and by the way, it's also supposed to have my father coming to bow down to me. So
that doesn't explain why he didn't write a letter
until... Oh, very good. And we're gonna get to the rejections of each of these as well. Right? And that's exactly what Nechama Leibowitz herself explains it. He says, even if that, but hold off on that for a second. The key point, if you look, what happens ultimately? Ultimately, the brothers come back with Binyamin. If you read the Psukim inside, again, every time the brothers, whenever they're describing themselves, what do they describe themselves as? Avdecha, right? Eved, that's the phrase used. And when the Parsha describes them, when the Chumash describes them, they're not described as Avdecha, they're described as either Achei Yosef, or the brothers of Yosef, or as the sons of Yaakov. And there's the only three ways that the brothers are described collectively. Every time they describe themselves as their servants. And guess who else they describe as their servant? They also, when they're talking about Yaakov, they also use the same exact phrase of Eved. Right? So each time the brothers are calling themselves the servants of Yosef. So you can understand Yosef hasn't seen his brothers in 22 years. And by the way, the last time he saw them, it wasn't such a pleasant experience. So Yosef here sees, he had these crazy dreams, and the whole time for 22 years, how did he ever get out of jail in the first place? Because he was able to tell Paro's dreams. So that lends even more credence to the fact that his dreams are meaningful. So Yosef now has these brothers come and he sees all this symbolism and it's like the brothers are all bowing down to him, asking him for wheat. And he says, oh my goodness, I really am supposed to be the tzofnat panayach. I'm really supposed to be the teller of the dreams. And so he says, go back and get Binyamin so he can come. And ultimately his plan is going to be that he's going to make sure that Yaakov can come to bow down to him too. Why? Because this is a nevuah. He has to fill the nevuah. And so the Ramban goes on to explain even more. But if you look at source number 4 now, so when Binyamin comes, look at the language again. Keeps the same exact language you have in Driva. Yishal lahem l'shalom, v'yomer ha'shalom avichem hazaken. First thing Yosef asks them when the brothers come back the second time. Come back with Binyamin. He releases Shimon from jail. He says, how's your father doing? Why would he care about their father? Asher amartem ha'odenu chai, that you told me was still alive. Yomru shalom la'avdecha la'avinu odenu chai. And here they call Yaakov Yosef's Eved, vayikdu vayishtachavu. And it has this like double language of bowing down. Right? Vayisa einav, vayaret Binyamin achiv benimo, vayomer hazeh achichem hakaton. He says, is that your little brother over there? Asher amartem elai, vayomer aleihem, yichon chavani. And they say, yeah, this is not just our little brother, but he says, be gracious unto thee, my son. Very beautiful language. What's so interesting about this? So go back to the scene, right? The scene of the crime. So the brothers sell Yosef down to Mitzrayim. Who's the one brother that's not there selling Yosef down to Mitzrayim? It's Binyamin. So now Binyamin comes, and Yosef obviously has, whether it's anger, whether it's some type of resentment, some type of bad experience with the other brothers, right? There's 10 brothers that he has this bad experience with. Who's the one brother that he doesn't have the bad experience with? That's Binyamin. And so now you see the way Yosef treats Binyamin, not just within this approach of the Ramban himself, but within all of the approaches is going to be the key to the story. That you see, on the one hand, you have the brothers and their personalities, the 10 of them, but now what we're starting to develop is the role of Binyamin in the story. Binyamin, by the way, at any point, does Binyamin ever speak in this story? How many words does Binyamin say in the Torah? Not so many. A little bit interesting there. More to see. Different shear for a different time. But the point is, the way Yosef approaches his relationship with Binyamin is going to be necessarily different than the way he approaches the rest of the brothers. Not just because he is Yosef's maternal brother. He's also the son of Rachel, but also because Yosef has a different relationship with Binyamin. At the time, he's a young child, and he doesn't have a chance to be involved with what the other brothers are doing. Okay? So that's the first answer. So now, you can ask your question again. What's the question? Right? Okay, so Shkayach. The brothers get there after 22 years, and all of a sudden, you're going to fulfill your prophecy. And by the way, my dreams were really prophetic visions. Okay, so like, what happened for the last 22 years? While you were having like your prophetic visions now, you couldn't have like called your dad? Right? Like, imagine, I know a lot of people here have kids, like imagine if your kids didn't call you for like 22 years, right? Like, that's kind of a big deal. So on the one hand, there's a great explanation, God forbid, there's a great explanation here for what happens in the moment, right? We have this kind of break, right? We have Vayeshev, and then we know Yosef gets sold down to Mitzrayim, then we have Miketz and Vayigash, and like the first half of Vayigash. So there's the Ramban's explanation works out beautifully for Miketz and Vayigash. But like, what about those 22 years where Yosef still never called his dad? And on top of that, the Abarbanel and the Akedas Yitzchak, and even the Ramban himself alludes to it if you read it carefully, ask another question and say, okay, so point number one, you still could have called your dad. Point number two, who decides that you're the one who gets to fulfill the prophecy that you get? If you think about Nevuah, most of the time the Nevuah is a discussion that's coming from Hashem in which there's a command. There's no command here. Yosef has a dream. Number one, it might not even really be Nevuah. There's a whole long discussion that you could read in the Rishonim. Was it really Nevuah? Was it Ruach HaKodesh? What's the difference between the two? Again, we don't have to get into that distinction itself, but the point is, it seems pretty interesting. There's no command that's ever given to Yosef in which he's told, go ahead and have the brothers bow down to you. He has a dream. And in his dream, he sees the brothers bowing down to him. But at no point does Hashem ever say, like he never knocks on Yosef's door and says, Yosef, here's what you've got to do. So this is not the standard type of Nevuah that we would have. So for that reason, while the Ramban's approach is very, very salient in terms of understanding the story of what's going on between Yosef and his brothers, it's something that a number of the later commentators have moved away from, and as well the Abarbanel himself have moved away from it. And they give a second approach. And the second approach is going to be a very nice kernel that opens up the story even more. So far we started to develop who is Yosef and who is Binyamin, and what their roles are. The second approach gets in a little bit deeper on two more brothers. Gets into Yehuda, and it gets into Reuben. And the second approach says like this. What was Yosef trying to do? So the brothers get there. Yosef obviously has an axe to grind. I mean, if you got sold to Egypt by your brothers, you also probably wouldn't like them so much. So the brothers get there. Yosef sees them all. Situation starts. They're bowing down to him. Of course, he remembers his dreams. What happens next? Yosef says he has to give the brothers an opportunity to do tshuva. But he's not thinking like tshuva, like Yom Kippur tshuva, that he wants them to do tshuva. He wants them to be in the same situation, and he wants to test them. So Rav Meidan is the one, I think, who says it most beautifully, but it's really, the kernel is really in the Abarbanel. He says like this. Skip ahead. Sorry, I'm skipping in the sources, but if you look at source number 9, Rambam and Hilchos Tshuva, okay? So a little bit of Yom Kippur for us, right? The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva writes, what is Tshuva Gemura? Tshuva Gemura is when you are in the same exact situation, and instead of going ahead with the chet like you did initially, instead you turn the other way. And if you look at the Rambam's language, Ezuhi Tshuva Gemura, Zeh Shebal Yadu Davar She'avar Ba. Right? It comes into your hands the same exact opportunity for a chet. Ve'efshar b'yado la'asot, u'piresh v'lo asa mipnei ha'tshuva. And you have the opportunity, and you don't do it because you've done tshuva. V'lo mi'yira, v'lo mi'chilshon koach. And you're not doing it just because you're afraid. Like, no wimpsel out here. The Rambam writes, you want to do real tshuva, it's not just because you got scared. Real tshuva is you have the same exact opportunity. And not only that, it's not because you're too tired to do the Aveira. You have to be literally in the same position, the same exact moment, and look at the language he gives. Harisha ba'al isha ba'aveira. So he gives, obviously, very extreme language, not something that's practical for us, but somebody who's ba'al isha ba'aveira, la'achar zman nit yachid ima, and then he finds himself, b'yichud, with the same exact woman, for who amei b'havato ba'u v'koach gufo, and he loves her, but he's able to hold back. Right, so that's obviously not a situation that any of us would ever find ourselves in. But what happens? What does the Rambam write? You're in the same exact position that you were. The same exact position that you were. However, you act differently. But one of the hardest things to do. First of all, think about how many times you fall down with an Aveira and you actually have an opportunity to do the Rambam's Tshuva Gemura. Right, where you're not too tired and you haven't just given up. But you're doing real Tshuva Gemura. So what happens? If you follow the storyline, what Rav Meidan explains is that Yosef puts the brothers in position, either knowingly or unknowingly, he puts them in position to do real Tshuva Gemura. So now go back to the story, and this is why we started with the story. Think about the beginning of Vayeshev. There's Yosef and his brothers. Why do the brothers not like Yosef? So there's two reasons. Primarily, there's two reasons. Number one, because Yaakov shows him favoritism, right? And number two, because Yosef is kind of like, he's kind of that little brother who's like rubbing their nose in it. He's like, not only does he have this coat of many colors, but he also tells them he has this dream, and all the brothers in the dream are bowing down to Yosef. So now what happens? Look at this so beautifully, okay? So now look at back to source number seven, okay? Look at this. So what does Yosef do? So he sees the brothers there, and he has to set up the situation where they can do tshuva. So how can he set up the situation where they can do tshuva? It's not like they're going to have another opportunity to maybe sell him down to Mitzrayim. So he says, what did they not like? Think about who the brothers were, okay? So there's kind of this power struggle. There's Yaakov Avinu. And throughout the entirety of the story of Yaakov and his brothers, you have Reuven is the oldest. And whenever something happens, he's always the first one to jump. He's always the first one to speak, whether it's with the wives, whether it's in any situation, he's the first one to speak. So the sons of Leah, you have Reuven. Then you have Levi and Shimon, right? Shimon and Levi. They've kind of been disowned because of the whole Shechem episode. And that's notably why Yosef chooses to throw Shimon into jail, okay? And then you have the fourth brother, Yehuda. And he's always the one who comes in at the last moment. And he's kind of the one that has the best ideas. If you think like in terms of like Godfather references, think like Sonny and Michael, okay? So Reuven is the oldest brother, and Reuven's always got all the bad ideas, but he's always the first one to jump up, and he's like, this is what we should do. Right, so now think about when the brothers sold Yosef, okay? Recall the story of when the brothers sold Yosef. So the brothers all have this idea, we're gonna kill Yosef. We're gonna kill Yosef, and then what happens? Who are the two brothers that object? Who are the only two brothers to object? Reuven and Yehuda, right? And what happens? Yehuda says, let's not kill him. Reuven says, let's not kill him. But they say it very differently. Ultimately, who's the one who's left, like, kind of wondering and missed the boat on his plan? Reuven's the one who missed the boat. We're not saying Yehuda's a tzaddik here in this story, but, right, Reuven is the one who kind of misses the boat. What are the two breaks from the narrative with Yosef and his brothers? There's only two breaks. One break is a few psukim, where it describes Reuven as taking over the bed of his father with Bilhah. And the other is the longer story of Yehuda and Tamar. Both of those are cases of, let's call it, family impropriety, right, generously, in those two brothers specifically. And they're going to be the two brothers who are going to vie for the equivalent of the Bechor. Now think about, what? Just family where they were perhaps in relationships that were inappropriate, right? Yehuda with Tamar and Reuven with Bilhah. We don't know exactly what the relationship between Reuven and Bilhah was, but it's something that the Torah, at least from the reading of the text itself, seems like the type of thing that the Torah is not smiling upon. Okay, and Yaakov certainly is not pleased either. Okay, so you have these are the two breaks, and these are always the two brothers who keep coming back, So now, fast forward to our pesukim, okay? So now look first, you know, let's skip this. You know what? Let's read this, actually. So Yosef sees the brothers for the first time. He throws Shimon in jail. Skip to Pasuk Chaf Aleph, okay? So what's the brother's response when Yosef talks harshly with them? What do they say? Vayomer ish el achiv, aval ha-shemim anachnu al achinu. What? The brothers, 22 years later, they come to Mitzrayim. The vice president of Egypt throws Shimon into jail, sticks them all in jail for 3 days, and what's the first thing they say? They're like, I can't believe we sold Yosef 22 years ago. What? They don't know that they're talking to Yosef, so we're reading the story. We're like, yeah, they're talking to Yosef, of course. 22 years later, they're like, that's what they were. Asher ra'inu tzarat nafsho b'itchano elenu v'lo shamanu. We didn't listen. Al-kein ba'elenu hatzara azot. They're like, this is why we're suffering. Now, that's like kind of a strange. So obviously, the sale of Yosef was a big deal to the brothers. So we don't know what happened for the next 22 years, but we do know that they're still thinking about it 22 years later. And then, of course, Reuven always shows up. Vayan Reuven otam lemor, halo amarti aleichem lemor, al techatel b'yel. He's like, didn't I tell you guys not to mess with the kid? V'lo shamatem, you guys didn't listen to me. V'gam damo hinei nidrash. And now we're being punished for it. Reuven all of a sudden shows up. He's like, by the way, guys, I told you we should not do this. And of course, the brothers are looking at Reuven like, come on, man. Come on. Right? Fine. So now the brothers end up going back. 9 out of the 12 brothers now return to Yaakov. They have the whole conversation with Yaakov. And first, who's the first one to plead with Yaakov? Reuven again. And what is Reuven's plea with Yaakov? You can read it inside. I don't have the psukim here. What is Reuven's plea with Yaakov? What does he say? He says, you know, I have two sons also, just like Rachel had two sons. And if, by the way, if I don't bring back Binyamin, you can kill my two sons. It's one of the strangest psukim in the Torah, right? That's Reuven's plea with Yaakov. He says, if I don't bring back your youngest son, you can kill my two sons. And Yaakov doesn't even respond. There is no response in the Torah from Yaakov. The Torah just moves on. Then Yehuda shows up, right? And if you look at Pasuk Lamed Bet, okay? It says, Ki avdecha aravet hanar me'im avi lemor. He says, what's happening? Or you know what? Actually, yeah, I have this is the wrong. Yeah, I didn't put these psukim. These are different psukim here. So you can look in the Chumash. It's toward the end of Perek Mem Bet. But the idea is that Yehuda says to Yaakov, and by the way, Yaakov, I will be the one who's responsible for Binyamin. And now if you look at source 8, the last part of it. Now when Yehuda is finally talking to Yosef, what does he say? He says, Ki avdecha arav et hanar. He says, I, your servant, right? He goes back after Binyamin's now under Yosef with the Gaviyah. He says, by the way, I want you to know, I am the one who's responsible for this child. If I bring him onto you, then I will be the one to have the blame forever with Yaakov. Im lo avienu elecha chatati laavi kol hayamim v'ata yeshev na'avdecha tachad anar eved ladoni v'anar yal imechav. Right? Ki eich ele el avi v'anar einenu iti. I can't go back to my father without the child. Now think about the contrast, right? So think about the contrast. So the first time, all the brothers are out doing whatever they're doing, they're grazing, and they return to Yaakov without Yosef. So now, Yehuda says to Yaakov, I will make sure that I come back with Binyamin. I will be responsible for Binyamin. So now, what happens? Yosef plants the goblet in Binyamin's coat. So now, all of a sudden, the brothers are at a point where they can now go back to they can go back to their father again, once again without the yelid. And Yosef wants to see, what are they going to do? And now, unlike the last time, where what did they do? They took the ketonet possum, they dip it in the blood, and they say, he's been killed by a wild animal, right? Instead, this time, Yehuda runs at Yosef and says, give me the child back. I can't return to my father without him. And he does the exact opposite. He does almost tshuva gemura. But Rav Meidan explains, what makes it real tshuva gemura? What makes it real tshuva gemura is that Yosef gives the brothers a reason to be jealous of Binyamin. Okay, so now look at the psukim very beautifully, very, very nice. Vayisa masad me'ed panav alayhem, vaterev masad Binyamin, masad kulam, chamesh adot, vayishtu, vayishakru imo. What happens, like we explained in the first answer, every single thing that Yosef does with Binyamin, he puts Binyamin on a pedestal. When the brothers get a portion, Binyamin gets 5 times the portion. When it comes time to put money into the sacks, he puts the goblet into their sacks. When it comes time to clothe Binyamin, he gives him special clothing. Very interestingly, why did they get so upset at Yosef in the first place? Because of Yosef's special clothing. So Yosef puts Binyamin on this pedestal, the last son of Rachel. And the brothers here are in a situation where they have to go back, they have to ask Yaakov to bring Binyamin down. So Yaakov once again has to send Binyamin out. Now Binyamin gets there, and now he puts the brothers in a position where they can either try to risk their own lives to save their brother, like they could have done with him. Or instead of risking their own lives, they can just go back to Yaakov and say, sorry, we lost Binyamin. And what does he see now? Yosef sees that Yehuda is so overcome with emotion. He sees that Yehuda is so convinced that he can't do the same chait to his father that he did initially. Yosef finally is overcome. When is the moment when Yosef finally says, Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai? Only when he sees that Yehuda is really a leader, and when he sees that Yehuda has done for the brothers what we call here the tshuva gemura. And now we understand why Yosef has been waiting this whole time. It's not because he doesn't love his father. It's because he has a real axe to grind against his brothers. And when he's so concerned with the way the brothers are going to treat him, he says, let's see if you guys have really done tshuva. Before I'm willing to go back into this, his feelings have been hurt. Before I'm willing to go back into this, let me see if you guys have really done tshuva. And through this approach of Ramadan, we understand the personalities, number one, of Reuven. Unfortunately, we see Reuven doesn't come out as such a star in this. We know all the brothers were tzaddikim, but in terms of the leadership mantle of Israel, who's going to be the one whose line carries the melucha? It has to come from Yehuda. Why? Because Yehuda is the one who, for the brothers collectively, does the tshuva. It can only be from Yehuda because he's the one who's willing to stick his neck out on the line, both in the way he protects Binyamin vis-a-vis Yaakov, and in the way he takes the risk vis-a-vis Yosef later. Very beautiful answer. However, Rav Yoel ben Nun still asks the same question that you asked initially. He says, that's all fine and well when the brothers get there. And I get it that Yosef was angry at his brothers. But what reason did he ever have to be angry at his father? What was the relationship with Yosef and Yaakov that got broken? At no point did Yosef and Yaakov's relationship get broken. Yosef still could have sent a letter. 22 years is a long time. At any point, he still could have reached out to Yaakov. So Rav ben Nun gives a different approach, and he flips the whole entire story on its head. Okay? He really flips the entire story on its head. He says, think about the perspective of Yosef. Okay? He says, take a step back. We as readers, number one, by the time we read the story analytically for the first time, we already know the story because there's a Disney movie and there's a play on Broadway and there's all these other things. We've had this story kind of like thrown in our faces for so many years that we already think we know the story without reading it inside carefully. What Rav ben Nun explains is like this. He says, all of the assumptions that we make in the story might not be the correct assumptions. He says, think about the following. What does Yosef think? Okay, Yosef's in the field with his brothers. Right? His brothers sell him down to Mitzrayim. Now think about who they sell them down to. We know, the Ramban told us, it's a 6-day journey between Mitzrayim and Hebron, where Yaakov and his family are. Was Yaakov a successful guy? Yes, incredibly successful. Okay, the Midianites, who are the ones that sold Yosef to the Egyptians, those are actually their cousins, right? They're related. And not only are they related, it would have been very easy for Yaakov to, or for any of the brothers, to give them a call and say, hey, by the way, where'd you sell Yosef to? So what Rav ben Nun says is, he says, why would Yosef ever call Yaakov? Why wouldn't Yaakov be the one to go search for Yosef? Now, what happens? The brothers go back to Yaakov with the ketonet pasim, and it's full of blood. Yosef doesn't know that. Yaakov, as we all know because we've read the story, thinks that Yosef's dead. He says, taruf taraf, it's over, I have no more Yosef, and he's going to sit shiva for the rest of his life, and he's incredibly, incredibly distraught and broken. Right? Yosef has no idea. Why would Yosef ever think that his father thinks that he was killed? So Yosef is actually the one who, instead of, like the Ramban said, should have called Yaakov, he's the one who for 22 years is thinking, well, I was in Potiphar's house. Potiphar's a powerful man. Yaakov's a powerful man. At any point, he could have called up Mitzrayim. He could have taken the journey, and he could have come to try to save his kid. Yosef was 17 years old at the time. Yaakov's the one that should have been the one to go look for Yosef. And the brothers, if they really were doing any semblance of tshuva, they not only could have looked for me, but they know exactly who ended up selling me down to Mitzrayim. They could have go talked to them. Those are local traders that ended up selling him down to Mitzrayim. And he says like this, when Yosef sees the brothers for the first time, he has no idea what to think. Because when he sees them, he's the one who thinks, these guys never came looking for me for 22 years. And not only that, my father never came looking for me for 22 years. So now, read the psukim again. Don't start from the psukim about the... What? Because why would his father think he's dead?
Because they're upset at him, and that he, primarily because he was the favorite, he got the six owners. There was obviously a lot of conflict between the brothers. Why would he ever think that his father was in on
it? Right. He didn't think his father was. He didn't think his father was in on it, but he's wondering why his father didn't come look for him.
Also, there was a little bit of a problem there. Marley said, you know, he knows the father knows the brothers don't like him. He's going to send out sent Joseph out to the brothers to build the wilderness.
Oh, very good. And that's by the way, that's their that could potentially support the Ramban's approach. That maybe there's something to be said for that. But with that said, I mean Rav Bindon's approach, right? So he would say like this, he would say Yaakov knew that the brothers didn't like him, and he's the one that sends Yosef out to the field, out from Hebron, where his home was, out to the field to where the brothers are. So Yosef's thinking like, maybe there's something there. Maybe there's something there. I'm not saying it's the only way to read it, but look at the psukim. It reads very beautifully into the psukim. If you look at the beginning, this is the very beginning of Yosef's conversation with his brothers. Vayar Yosef et echav vayakirem. Yosef sees his brothers and he recognizes them. Vitnaker alem vidaber itam kashot, and he talks very harshly to them. Okay, understandable why he's talking harshly. Vayomer alem me'ayin batem vayomer me'eretz kedan lishbar ochel vayikar Yosef et echav vehem lo hikiruhu. Vayiskor Yosef et echalonot, so on and so forth. So the first thing that happens is Yosef recognizes his brothers, and the first thing he does is he speaks harshly with them. He's angry. He's been angry for a long time. Okay, so now, continuing, when Yosef names his children, what does he name his children? Very strange names that Yosef gives to his children. Look at the first name he gives. Yosef finally has a child. He's finally gotten out of jail. He becomes this big prince of Egypt. Vayikra Yosef et shem habachor Menashe, ki nashani Elokim et kol amaliv et kol beit avi. He calls him Menashe because Hashem has forgotten, has enabled me to forget everything that went down in my father's house. He's obviously, it's like almost like it's been traumatic for him. So all he wants to do, and the way he names his oldest child is he says, I'm going to establish a family, and the way I establish my family is going to be necessarily different than the way that my father established his family. I'm going to make sure that it's different. Everything that happened in Beit Avi, I want to forget about this. I'm in Mitzrayim now. I'm my own man. I don't want to see them. So now you start to understand, right? Even if he doesn't think his father's in on it, he still has this feeling of he had such a bad experience there. It was so bad for him that he even goes out of his way to name his first son in a negative fashion. Okay? Now, look what happens. The first thing that he asks his brother, each time his brothers come back, he's starting to understand more and more of the story. So each time, who does he ask about? He asks about their father. What does their father have to do with the brothers? Vanomer el Adoni, Yeshlanu Avzakain, Vyelad Zukunim Katan, Vachiv Mate, Vivater Hulavato, Limo Ula Vivahevel. When Yosef and Yehuda, and I skipped obviously a lot of psukim in the interest of time, but when Yosef and Yehuda have at the beginning of Ayigash this conversation, what does Yosef say to Yehuda? Finally, after two and a half parshas, he finally lays out the whole story. He finally says to him, and by the way, why am I so nervous about Binyamin? Because we used to be 12 brothers. And there's one brother, right? Achiv Meit. And Yosef is like, Achiv Meit? Brother died. And he's doing the counting in his head, and he's like, how many brothers are there? He's like, wait a minute. Me, that's me. I'm not dead. I'm right here. He's like, Vachiv mate. He says, Hayelet Hakaton. He's like, that's Binyamin. That's the guy I've got. There's another 10 brothers. Vachiv mate. I'm dead. The father thinks that I've died. He's like, I'm not dead. And now, all of a sudden, according to Rav Binyamin, the story starts to become a little bit more clear to him. And he's like, wait a minute. They told my father that I'm dead. And you can still understand this approach in terms of the brothers doing the tshuva and in terms of that whole beautiful gets to the point of where Yehuda has to be the one to take the mantle of leadership for the family, and he has to be the one to go ahead and to defend Binyamin. But if you have just this backdrop of Yosef never realizes until the very end of it that his father doesn't think that he's alive, all of a sudden you start to understand the original question of the Ramban. Why did Yosef never write home? Because the answer is, he didn't realize that Yaakov thought that he was dead. He the whole time is thinking, where's Yaakov? Where are my brothers? And he's looking at this family with so much trauma, and he doesn't realize that it's been the whole time for those 22 years. The brothers never knew where he went, because by the time they went back to get him, he had already been sold down to Egypt. So the brothers have no idea he's there. He has no idea that the brothers have been literally davening about this for the last 22 years, because we see what happens when he puts them in jail. The first thing they say is, you know why this happened? Because we sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim. And then when they're finally face to face with Yehuda, he says, and one of our brothers is dead. They thought that he was dead, and he doesn't realize that they thought that the whole time. So now what happens? Hashem has this master plan where the brothers are going to come down to Yosef, they're going to fulfill his dreams, but throughout, Yosef has no idea what they're thinking. They have no idea what Yosef's thinking. And Yosef recognizes them right the moment they get to Mitzrayim. They don't recognize Yosef. And you have kind of this like feeling out process. Yosef thinks that he's running the show, and he thinks he's going to get them to go bring Binyamin so that they can do the tshuva. The whole purpose of it is in order to express face to face that the brothers have felt remorse for the last 22 years, and that in fact Yosef to the brothers is still alive. And ultimately it leads to Yaakov coming down to Mitzrayim and to the establishment of Am Yisrael in Mitzrayim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu had dreamed for Yosef that it would happen all initially. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the dreams, all the people make their actions, and then ultimately what happens is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, we just think that we're acting differently. So just to review, very beautiful story. We have 2.5 parashiyot that are literally one continuous narrative. One central question that we can ask is, why does Yosef never reach out to his father, never reach out back to his family when he's achieved so much success in Edom? We have 3 different answers. The first is the Ramban, that Yosef's dreams were in fact a nevuah, and Yosef goes out of his way to fulfill the nevuah. The second is that Yosef sees his brothers, recognizes them, sees that they feel remorse, wants to give them an opportunity to do tshuva, and then ultimately the tshuva they do is literally the tshuva gemura of the Rambam. And then the third answer, and ultimately not really a different answer than the second one, but building on it, is that from Yosef's perspective, he doesn't realize that the brothers think that he's died, and the brothers don't realize that he's now in Mitzrayim. And ultimately, the dance for 2.5 parshiot is for the brothers and for Yosef to figure out exactly what each has been thinking for the last 22 years. And in order for them to have this reconciliation, they have to realize the brothers have felt bad about it, Yaakov has felt bad about it, and now Yosef understands that really they can reunite the family and start to build Klal Yisrael together. Okay. Yeah. Okay. 1 second. Yeah. How?
We know that why Yaakov didn't write it. Why don't the brothers come over?
Right. I mean, I think So Reuben Nun says is they think he really was dead.
The reason why Yaakov was dead. Yeah. There's no reason why the brothers.
But he wasn't there in the pit when they went back to go find him.
They knew he wasn't.
Right, they knew he wasn't in the pit. So
they knew he was sold.
Who sold him? That was going to ask you.
Presumably the Midianites sold him. Presumably the brothers are not the ones who actually. If you read the Pesukim carefully,
he was in the pit. Then the brothers.
They run back to go get him. He's already gone from the pit, though.
Shkoyach. Thank you very much, Rabbi Jacob.
They didn't sell. They didn't give him.